42. The Dark Deeps. Once they had boarded, Moro closed the hatch on the Actinio, spinning it into locked position.
Quickly, Captain Monturiel said.
Serdar, take Moro to the crow's nest. He'll be our navigator.
She patted Moro's shoulder.
You'll be watching for obstacles. There is a speaking tube which you will use to communicate with the bridge.
And me?
Colette asked.
You were good with the ballast tanks. You are officially a control officer now.
Serdar led Moro to the bow of the ship.
The crow's nest is normally at the top of ship, isn't it?
Moro asked.
Yes, but on the Actinio it's the nose. Its purpose is the same as on any ship. You will have a view above, below, and to either side. You will be able to see much more than the captain can through her periscope.
Serdar opened a hatch door and led Moro into the tight little crow's nest. There were several large portholes, as though Moro were standing in the eye of an insect. A light shone from the bow of the ship, illuminating the underwater wall of the bay. Suspended over the portholes was a chair with multiple belts. It looked like something a clever spider might have designed.
Be seated, Serdar said.
Moro sat, and Serdar began strapping him in.
These are to prevent you from being thrown around when we smash into our enemy.
Moro didn't like the feeling of being tied down.
From here you can see above and below the Actinio, through the viewports. When you spot an obstacle, lift this shut-off valve and report through the speaking tube.
The tube was hanging to Modo's left and ended in a bell-shaped mouthpiece.
I understand.
It is important that you flip the valve closed at the end of communication, especially important if we are about to ram a vessel.
Why is that?
If this chamber is flooded, we don't want the water to penetrate the remainder of the Actinio through the tubing.
Oh, that makes sense.
Moro tried to say this as calmly as possible, but his voice cracked.
Don't worry, my friend, Serdar said. She is a sturdy ship. Remember, you are the Ictinio's eyes.
He went to the door, and as he was shutting it, said,
I am sorry. I must keep this closed.
You are very brave.
Thank you,
Moro said, but the door was already closed.
Moro hadn't thought about what might happen to the viewports when the Actinio bashed into the Wyvern, and what damage would that exploding mace do.
All clear,
he muttered into the speaking tube. He pulled back on the valve.
Moro here, saying the crow's nest is all clear. Thank you, navigator.
Captain Monturiel's voice came back to him through another tube that dangled above.
Please inform me only of an obstruction. I know this area well.
They left the bay and accelerated over the plateau. Moro opened his eyes wide. No matter how hard he stared upward, he couldn't see the Wyvern's hull.
Shouldn't we shut off the exterior lamps? He asked.
We want them to follow us, Monturiel said.
We will reach the edge of the plateau soon, Moro. Please inform me once we have passed it.
Moro watched as the ground dropped away into an underwater canyon of unimaginable depth.
We are over the top of it now.
You are looking at the Valley of Clave.
She sounded very calm.
Moro glanced up and saw a dark shape far above them. He couldn't even be sure it was real.
I believe the Wyvern is 45 degrees to starboard.
Good eyes.
She had adjusted something, because now one of the Actinio's lights lit the hull of the other ship, which began to move.
They're following us, Moro shouted.
Thank you, Moro,
Monturiel said. Apparently she had left her speaking tube open because Moro heard her orders for Colette.
Fill the forward ballast to 20%. We begin our descent.
The Actinio shifted. They were pointing down now, the screw propeller pushing them ahead as the ballast tanks took on water. The hydrogen light illuminated the darkness, showing him the Actinio's battering ram. The red substance on it was probably barnacles, but it looked like blood. Hikaria's mace was a fist clamped to the end of it. He stared past the ram. There was no sign of rock or sandy soil. Occasionally he saw fish with large, bulging eyes and flat bodies, as though the pressure of the ocean had shaped them, but mostly it was just a great empty blackness. He glanced at the pressure gauge. They were at 28 atmospheres of pressure. He calculated that they were near 300 yards below the ocean's surface.
He didn't know how many meters that was, but guessed it was near the same amount. How deep had the captain said the ship was designed to go? 1,000 meters? That was collapse depth. But it would all be theoretical. He examined the glass porthole. How much further could they go before it cracked? Montoriel and Sir Dar had built this ship well, he reassured himself, and had likely been much deeper than this. The deeper they went, the more the pressure began to squeeze the Actinio. The ship began to groan as though it were trying to warn its occupants of the danger. "We are at about 300 meters, Modo said into the speaking tube. "I am aware of our exact depth, Modo," Captain Montoriel said. "The Actinio will hold, if that is your worry." Modo clicked his speaking tube closed. "That is exactly my worry," he whispered. He removed the handkerchief and wiped at his eyes. Just as he was replacing it, a dark, rocky form loomed in the central viewport, sticking out of the ocean floor. "Hard right! Hard right!" he bellowed, but he hadn't flicked the switch on the speaking tube. He snapped the switch up. "Hard right! To starboard! Impact! Dead ahead!" At once, the Actinio veered to the right. Serdar was responding. The ram missed the jutting rocks by feet, but the bottom of the submarine ship was not so lucky. With a sudden impact that sent Modo banging against his straps, the Actinio scraped the underwater mountain spire and began to spiral downward. Modo looked out the main window. The outer light swept back and forth as they attempted to gain control of the ship. "All clear! All clear!" he said, wanting to contribute something. He glanced at the pressure gauge. 51 atmospheres. He calculated from 550 yards to 600 yards. The hull of the Actinio moaned like a live thing, as though a giant were squeezing it with two hands. Where was the bottom, he wondered. Where was it? How far? Any moment he expected to see it come rushing up. The Actinio rotated a half turn clockwise, then spun back the other way. The glass would go first. He was certain of it. And then what? Could he flee to the other chamber in time? Or would the force of the water crush him? He looked down hopelessly at all the straps. A bolt, loose or rusted, suddenly shot across the room, and water began to spout through the hole. He thought of Octavia, found himself wishing, oddly, that he hadn't argued about Shakespeare with her. And then he had a second thought. I should have shown her my face. "Ballasts are empty," Colette's voice drifted above Modo. "A leak in the crow's nest. It's leaking here," Modo said. "Calm down," Captain Montoriel commanded. "How bad is it?" A few gallons a minute, I'd guess. Inform us if it worsens." Another mass was approaching. "Obstacle dead ahead," Modo shouted. I think it's the bottom of the canyon." "Brace for impact, then," Captain Montoriel said. "I'm going to switch the center of gravity." There was a loud thunk. The submarine ship straightened as though all its weight had shifted aft. It flipped further so that its nose angled upward. Modo thought a miracle had occurred until he realized the ship was continuing to plunge at the same speed. A moment later, he felt the impact.